Hello and welcome to the latest episode of The Science of Social Media. My name is Phil Agnew and I'm a product marketer here at Buffer. First, some exciting news. You can now schedule content to YouTube using Buffer, alongside, of course, all of your other favourite social networks. This is a brand new integration and we are pumped about it. I'll share a little more about that at the end of the episode, but for now, I wanted to share a fantastic interview my colleague Mike did with the brilliant YouTube creator, Paul O'Malley. Paul is a YouTuber who is dedicated to helping others get the most out of their tech, specifically tricky-to-use tools like Microsoft Teams, Excel, and Mastodon. On his YouTube channel, he shares brilliant tips and tricks to his 32,000 subscribers. In preparation for our YouTube integration, we got in touch with Paul and asked his advice for creating YouTube content on the platform. Over this interview, he shares his best tips for growth on YouTube, do's and don'ts on the platform, plus advice for those just getting started. It's a great listen. So without further ado, here's Mike asking what encouraged Paul to start creating content on YouTube.
I mean, that's kind of why I wanted to chat with you today, was to talk a bit about YouTube. So I guess kind of going back to the beginning of that, I was curious, like, how did that come about? Like, did you make a conscious decision that you wanted to build a YouTube channel, or was it just something that kind of happened organically? How did that happen?
Kind of a little bit of both. I actually used to run a bit of a YouTube channel just over a decade ago now. And then I kind of just was like, cool, this is stuff on the side, forget about it, and just didn't bother with it for a bunch of years. And over the last few years, I've had a lot of roles in tech and stuff, spent a few years working at Microsoft as well, which was absolutely legendary. But a lot of the time during then, I had people going and saying to me, like, you're really good at explaining this stuff in a way I can understand. Like, do you want to create YouTube content? Like, maybe you should do these videos online. And I used to always just kind of blow it off, going, yeah, cool. Maybe one day, who knows? And then until very recently, I was in a role where I was literally creating this sort of video content, sort of short bite-sized clips, just kind of a quick tip here, a quick tip there. And so over the last year or so, I've kind of really developed my skills in that regard, drastic amounts compared to what I used to be able to do. And so, yeah, in the last few months, I kind of was like, you know what? I'm sure other people could make use of this content as well. And so I decided to start putting a few of the videos up on YouTube, and some of it started to gain traction, including, you know, people such as yourself kind of noticing some of the content that I was creating and, you know, putting it out on blast around the social media spheres and things like that. So, yeah. And as a result, it's drastically increased the reach that I could possibly have. So, and as a result, I'm like, YouTube's decided they want to start paying me for it on occasion. So I may as well keep at it.
Yeah. And so the monetization side of things, that happened pretty recently, right?
Literally in the last couple of weeks. So it was a little bit of a process, mostly just because from when I previously had monetization ages and ages and ages ago, it caused a little bit of a problem with my AdSense account that YouTube require, which made the process take a few days longer than I expected. But with a bit of help from YouTube support and AdSense support on the back end, we were able to get that resolved. And so, yeah, for the last few days or so, at least, YouTube's been throwing a few cents my way each day. And you know, I kind of look at it and go, it's a bit of extra income on the side. It's, you know, it's not life-changing money by any stretch of the imagination. But it's a nice little incentive to keep on creating the content that I've been making. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And I imagine good validation as well to kind of just keep going and one step along the journey, I suppose.
Correct.
And did you, I guess when you started making videos, were there any other platforms that you considered using, or was it always going to be YouTube?
I think it was always going to be YouTube. I'm quite a quite a fan of tech in general. And so I'd considered other platforms and things like that. But as much as I would hate to say it, the only real platform that would be able to give me the reach I needed would be YouTube. Like Vimeo is great, but it's more of a business to business platform, more than consumer platform. Mm. And for those that have kind of started stretching out into the Fediverse with Mastodon and things like that, there's PeerTube, which is out there as well. And I'd considered that as well, but yet again, the sheer reach, like there's no way I would have over 30,000 people following me on PeerTube in the span of 4 or 5 months, whereas I do now on YouTube. So
it's been, you've managed to gather 30-ish thousand followers in the space of what, less than 6 months?
Yeah. I had a lot of help in that regard. Mostly because I had some, you know, constant growth from my own internal networks and things like that. And from my previous roles, there were people who kind of knew the content I created. But I was somewhat lucky to have, yourself. And also, I had a couple of program managers from Microsoft actually kind of like and retweet a couple of my tweets regarding some of the videos that I'd made. And you know, when someone who has over 100,000 subscribers themselves retweets something of yours, it tends to have a nice flow-on effect. And as a result of that, I, you know, in the span of 1 week, I had, you know, 6,000 or 7,000 people subscribe, which, like, I was looking at the numbers going, what is going on here? and it was just absolutely mind-boggling. But it's great to see.
Yeah, that's fantastic. And I guess, like, well, maybe we'll talk a little bit about kind of growing your reach later on, but kind of going back to that process of getting started with a channel and getting started with content and stuff like that. How did you come up with, like, your initial ideas for videos, and how did you kind of get into that flow of, you know, kind of creating regularly?
It's a bit of a tough one. I kind of, as far as the ideas for the videos that I have, I've always been a really, really big fan of pushing the technology that I have to its absolute limits to basically save myself time. So I position my channel as quick tips to improve efficiency, right? And I know a lot of people say improve productivity. Productivity is just one measure. I prefer efficiency. I have a keyboard where I've reprogrammed keys to do macros and things like that. I've got my mouse here with multiple buttons set to control different things to speed up my workflow just a little bit each time. Mm-hmm. And like, I look at it and go, if I could save myself 10 minutes a day, that adds an extra work week at the end of the year. Right. Like I could do a heck of a lot with an extra week every year. And I'm sure a lot of other people could as well. And so every time I find these little hidden features or little tips that kind of just help people's workflows just be a little bit more seamless, I like to share them out. I've recently started playing around with Google Docs and Google Sheets and things like that as well to kind of expand beyond just the Microsoft sphere. And I'll be honest, in the last week or so, I've gone down a rabbit hole with using ChatGPT inside Google Docs and things like that. And it's just crazy to see what the technology can potentially do when you just know that little shortcut to leverage it. Hopefully I can show someone a tip that takes 5 minutes out of their day now, but saves them 5 minutes every day from here until eternity. And I feel like that's kind of the guiding star for, you know, is the tip worth showing someone? Then if it improves their workflow, then it's worth showing them.
Yeah. So it's almost like you're sort of scratching your own itch, really. Like, instead of what are people going to be interested in? You're like, well, this is stuff that helps me, so I'm just going to share that out. And that sort of feels like a pretty nice sort of organic, you know, conveyor belt of stuff that you can share.
Honestly, it could be something as simple as a keyboard shortcut that people don't know about. all the way through to, you know, something completely crazy like throwing in ChatGPT and having ChatGPT completely fill in lists and things for you, right? Like there's really small things, really big things. It could even be an accessibility feature. Personally, I don't, aside from the terrible eyesight on occasion, I don't really have any major vision impairments, but I know a lot of people who have colorblindness. And I know a lot of people do. And so even though I don't use the color filters that are in Windows, I've seen the effect that people can have when I turn it on for them and then have them go, oh my God, what? I you know, and seeing that light bulb moment for them and, you know, showing them a feature that's been in Windows for literally over half a decade, but people don't even know exists. And so if it can have such a big impact for them, it's like, yeah, I just you can probably see the passion already, but like I love that light bulb moment, and having someone else go, oh, I could use that to, oh, and just seeing the knock-on effect for them, that's really what drives me, and has for years. So it's good to see that.
Yeah, that's awesome. I guess, you know, speaking of, you know, some videos might be just a small tip, others may be a bit more extensive. Like, do you have a set length of video that you like to create, or, you know, to any kind of guidelines that you use there?
Yeah. I try to keep the video as short as possible. The thing that drives me insane when I go onto YouTube looking for like a how-to video is when the first 3.5 minutes of someone going, yo, 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 it's your boy. Don't forget to smash that like button. Yeah. And I hate that. And then on top of it, the only thing that makes it worse is when there's just like some insane psytrance music playing in the background. And I'm like, don't get me wrong, love me some psytrance on occasion, but not when I'm trying to find out how to recall an email in Outlook. You know, like I've just accidentally sent this email. I need to recall it now. I can't spend 3.5 minutes watching you talk about your channel. And so most of my videos are sub 5 minutes. Quite a lot of them are actually less than 3 minutes long. I think some of the, like maybe the longest videos I've got are maybe 7 minutes. And that's because they're something that's a little bit more in depth and requires a little bit more setup beforehand. I try to keep it brief to the point, but also clear enough that someone can just follow along themselves and understand as I'm doing it. There's nothing I hate worse than when someone's kind of blasting through something and going way too quick. And then all of a sudden I'm like, hang on, how did you get from step 4 to step 7? Like what's going on in the middle there? I like to try to go through as step by step wherever I can, make it as clear and concise as possible.
Yeah. That makes sense. I was, I got stuck going back and forth in a single video recently, trying to figure out how to basically put together a pram. And I was there, honestly, I reckon I spent about half an hour on a 4-minute video, just kind of going back and forth.
I mean, the creator must have loved that. It increases the watch time.
Yeah, there you go. Maybe that's a cheeky hack or something.
Possibly.
I mean, we should also maybe jump into, I guess, like technically how you create your videos. Do you have a, you know, kind of anything in your toolkit that you rely on? Like kind of, if you want to walk us through what that kind of process looks like and what tools you use, I think that could be interesting.
I definitely create all my videos on Windows. I know a lot of video creators use Mac and things like that. I've grown up on Windows since I was, you know, knee-high to a grasshopper kind of thing. And so Windows is what I know. I have a dedicated 1080p monitor here. And the reason for that is actually because of the videos that I broadcast are in 1080p. And so I like being able to record a full screen and things like that. And for the screen recording itself, I know there are a lot of features inside Windows to do screen recording. In fact, I've made videos on a couple of them. But I personally use a program called Camtasia. Camtasia is honestly built from the ground up for the type of content that I create. It has dedicated screen recording features. But one of the best things it does is that even though you'll see in my videos that I have the mouse highlighted so you can always tell exactly where it is. I have red rings that pop up whenever I left click on anything, yellow rings whenever I right click. Obviously, Windows doesn't do that natively. And so Camtasia is actually recording my mouse movements and clicks and things like that so that I can then show those later on. It also makes it substantially easier for me to be able to zoom in on areas and things like that. It's unfortunately not free software. It does cost a little bit of money, but the benefit is that like you can do, it sped up my workflow miles. And generally speaking, I'll do my screen recording. I'll try and have kind of a storyboard created I know I'm going to do this. And I'm going to talk about going to here and I'm going to go to this and then I'm going to do this. And then I'll do the screen recording generally in a single hit. But then I'll go through and I'll do my editing, zooming in, highlighting, squaring off things so that people can see everything on the screen as I'm doing it. And then once I've kind of got the base template down, that's when I go into the audio recording side of things. So I know a lot of people who create this content online will actually try and do the talking through as they're doing the screen recording as well. And Camtasia does have that capability. But personally, I use Audacity to do the audio recording afterwards. So once I've got my template, I just literally play it back and record and do my voiceover whilst I'm watching the recording playback. And the benefit for that there is that Audacity has the ability to record at a higher bit rate or a higher clarity level of audio compared to what Camtasia can do. It's honestly something that almost nobody will notice the difference. But I'm also a little bit of an audiophile on the side. So I can pick up those things. Like, I mean, I've put soundproof on the sound dampening on a couple of the walls in here. I've got big heavy drapes here to deaden the sound to make sure that everything is nice and crisp and clean. Obviously, I want to make sure that when people are watching the videos later on, I want them to be able to understand what I'm actually saying. So after I've done the audio recording, there is a little bit of a process with removing the little lip smacks and things like that out of the audio, getting rid of any of the sort of the background noise and really muting out any of the silences and things like that. Once all of that's done, it's a matter of exporting it. But then comes a little bit more of an in-depth process, which is the subtitles. I know YouTube has automatic subtitling capability and it's okay. It's not super accurate, especially when it misunderstands Microsoft Excel and puts Microsoft XL as in extra large. Don't get me wrong, Excel's great, but I don't think it's extra large. I will usually use, funnily enough, I actually use the Google Voice Recorder app on my phone. And for those who happen to have a Pixel phone, it is really accurate. I'll use that, get the transcript from there. Now it sounds kind of weird, but I take that transcript, put it into Microsoft Word, and then use Microsoft Word to give it a proofread over, make sure the grammar is everything is correct. And then when I'm uploading the video to YouTube, just literally copy and paste the text in, and Google is smart enough, like YouTube is smart enough to be able to sync the voice up, and it does it extremely accurately. And basically from there, it's just a matter of just touching up a couple of things here and there to make sure the subtitles flow well. And then the only other tool that I really use is Figma. So I've got like templates that I use for all of my thumbnails. I know a lot of people on YouTube these days have like the, you know, looks on their faces and all that sort of stuff. And it just annoys the crap out of me. So personally, I've just kind of got a very basic template, got the logo of whatever product it is that I'm showcasing in the video, and then maybe three or four words beside it as to kind of a headline of what it is the video is about. It's super easy for me to make those. That takes seconds. Just get it all uploaded to YouTube, put it in the queue and get it to post on a semi-regular basis, which is good to see. So.
How about the microphone? Is that an expensive piece of kit or Something homemade?
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. So the microphone I use isn't super expensive. It's actually quite low end in its range. It's the Scarlett 2i2. It's from a company called Focusrite. It is an XLR microphone, which allows it to be just, the sound quality is much better than compared to like a USB mic or something like that. Generally speaking, though, XLR mics will be quite expensive. This particular setup retails for around about $500 Australian for the microphone and the audio interface that I have hidden behind my monitor here. I got really lucky, and a guy on Gumtree was selling it. An unwanted Christmas gift was selling it for $250. So I was like, I will take that off your hands. Thank you very much. Would I prefer a better quality microphone? I would love one, obviously. But I've got this set up, and I picked up a little shield here, which basically helps prevent reverb and things like that on from around the walls and stuff. I didn't spend a huge amount of money on it, but obviously you can really spend a lot of money if you try.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like it's doing the job. So I guess that's the most important thing.
Yeah.
Well, moving on to, I guess, less about the creation of the content and more on the distribution of the content. We talked a little bit about how, you know, over the last 6 months, you've had a bit of help with your growth in subscribers, I guess, from sort of influencers in your space, kind of, you know, whatever it is, tweeting out or posting out some links to your videos. Was there a sort of an inflection point where, you know, you were sort of maybe growing slowly, and then all of a sudden it's like, okay, here we go, we're onto something now?
Yeah, I mean, obviously having people with six-figure follow accounts retweet my stuff was kind of really that inflection point. But there was steps that I kind of took based on the analytics that I was getting from YouTube, which kind of sounds kind of nerdy to be looking at the data from that perspective, I guess. But I was finding that, I'm in Sydney, so Australian time zones are not always the best depending on where your audience is. And so I was looking at the analytics from YouTube around when it is that people are watching my videos the most. And a lot of the time I was asleep, or being perfectly honest, sitting on the couch playing Halo. So at that point it was a matter for me of going, okay, well, I need to figure out how am I going to get the most traction. Personally, I don't use Twitter a lot myself anymore. I'm more on Mastodon than anything else in that respect. But given that there's no algorithm there, it's a very much a matter of being able to find your audience at the right time. And so, funnily enough, that was where Buffer came in. Trying to schedule a post for Mastodon was quite cumbersome and very limited in functionality until Buffer came along to kind of offer that. And so first thing I did was go, oh, heck yes, this is amazing. Because I'd already been using it for Twitter. I'd been using it for LinkedIn, back years ago when I was still using Facebook pretty regularly. I was using it for Facebook as well. And so being able to kind of schedule my posts on Mastodon and Twitter to go out at times when I knew I was going to be able to get some traction based on the people that were following me, that kind of really helped, because I used to post something on Mastodon around lunchtime for me. And whilst that's great, it's the middle of the night for Europe. And it was just kind of like, I was getting maybe four or five people, you know, boosting my posts or something like that, or getting a few likes here and there. But then when I was able to start posting the full content that I wanted at the time that worked best for my audience, that started to go and see, hey, you know what? Now that post that used to get maybe 20 reposts, you know, and stuff like that is now getting 2,500. It was just kind of like, huh, okay, I should probably keep doing this. And so, yeah, and I'd seen a bunch of people on Mastodon that were in a similar boat to me going, you know, scheduling a post is something that people who work in social really need to be able to do. And so that was when I decided to, funnily enough, make a quick video on how to use it. And yeah, got a bit of traction with that as well. So there, it was usually those sorts of points. I wouldn't say that there was kind of any one big tip. It was like, hey, look, you know, you have to do this to get all your subscribers. It's like, no, it's a very much an incremental thing, and it's using the data you have available to be able to be as efficient as possible. You know, I hate spending time doing mundane work that I don't need to do. And, you know, being able to schedule those things so that I didn't have to make sure I was online at the right time to post just saves me time and effort. So,
yeah. And so is it social media is your sort of main distribution channels for your videos? And are there any other ways that you get, I guess, links to your videos out there? Or is it mainly social?
It's mostly social, I think. Yeah. Like I found that obviously, yeah, I'd post and some people would retweet and like it. I have friends and family who are really nice and then spam it on all of their friends. but basically I'm kind of finding now that funnily enough, when I left my previous role where I was creating this content for internal use and things like that, and now I'm creating it public facing, a lot of the people who I didn't know were really getting a lot of benefit from the content internally have now started reaching out to me and connecting with me via LinkedIn and things like that. And they've been resharing my content amongst their teams internally. And so it's kind of really nice to see the network aspect of social networking really come into play there. Like I've suddenly grown followers and users from a random educational district in Texas, all because one person who I used to work with loved a couple of my videos and started sharing them out with some of their colleagues. And so as a result, it just kind of started spreading. And now I've got a little bit of a following amongst educators in Texas.
There you go.
Yeah. And it's very much that network base from the social side of things that really helped.
Yeah. Yeah. Having that sort of organic word of mouth, I think is something that, you know, everyone kind of wants to achieve in terms of trying to get their content out there. So
100%.
Could you say that there's anything that has contributed to that organic word of mouth? I mean, obviously the content's good. I'd say that's probably the main thing. Is there anything else?
I'd say probably mostly the content. My wife will say that this is a downside. I will not. I like to help where I can, which sounds very self-serving to say it like that, but hear me out. quite a few of the videos that I will post on YouTube and that in the comments, someone will go, hey, like, this is a thing. Mine isn't quite working like this. I'm seeing this instead. And whilst I know that I can't physically go and look at that person's computer, and if I could look at their computer, I could probably fix their problem in 20 seconds, right? Like I'm pretty technical in that sort of background area, I guess. I used to do tech support for a living. But even though I'm not there, I still kind of like to help. I randomly get tagged by people on Mastodon going, hey, I'm not sure who can help you here, but Paul might know how to do it. And the fact that like people are kind of understanding me as that sort of an avenue for help as well. Like I've actually gotten some pretty cool video ideas as a result of people asking me questions going, hey, look, I'd love to know, how can I do this better? You know, and then I go and look up the answer, because if someone's asked me that question, I can't stop thinking until I figure it out. And as a result, you know, it can potentially help me, but on the flip side, I can help them. And so as a result, now those, you know, there's been some people who didn't know about me, but then got referred to me for support or help. I've been able to find an answer for them. And now as a result, that person is now following me and, you know, looked at some of my previous content, and it just really knocks on from there. So I'd like to say that a willingness to help where I can kind of really did help drive the growth as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that sounds, even if your wife disagrees that it's not always a good thing, but I mean, to me, it sounds, a lot better than trying, you know, the sort of the typical hacks. You know, you sort of mentioned like, okay, you got to have your, you know, your cover screen has to be like your face looking like this. Yeah. So, and you got to have, you know, the kind of flashy transitions and stuff like that. I'm guessing here you sort of avoid that approach altogether and wouldn't necessarily recommend it.
I'm sure that those lovely little tips and things like that do work for some. I will 100% tell people, if someone then reaches out over one of your social media posts and asks you to like sign up to one of those websites to like, you know, buy subscribers and stuff, do not do it. Right. Like, one, it's probably a scam and doesn't work anyway. And two, even if it did work, it's against YouTube's terms of service. But like I had to block a few people that kept reaching out to me every time I posted a YouTube video initially, because they were like, oh, I see you've only got 400 subscribers. Would you like some more? And I'm like, no, look, I'm doing fine, right? It's fine. I've seen a lot of the sort of, you know, this one simple tip will help you get all your view time and all this sort of stuff. And I personally didn't expect the boost in growth that I got, right? Like there was very much some sort of the knock-on effect from other people sharing and things like that as well. Plus, as a result, people seeing previous content of mine and going, oh, hey, the content's actually not bad. That was kind of the biggest, I guess, tip for me, is just make content that is valuable to people. If you can try and be consistent, right? Like people follow or people subscribe to channels when they know what they're going to get, right? Like the YouTube channels that I subscribe to it's kind of like, cool, I know that when I follow abroad in Japan, I'm going to get some great travelogue style videos of Japan. You know, I'm very much a fan of Japan. Those are the sorts of things that I find. So if you're the sort of person that goes and posts a video about this and then a video about something completely different and then a video about something completely different, people are less likely to subscribe. But all I can really say is be consistent, you know, post regularly if you can, right? Like try not to post 25 videos in a week and then nothing for 6 months, right? Like I personally schedule my posts, not just my social posts, but also my YouTube posts. Mm-hmm. So at the moment, I've got a bit of spare time. And so I've been creating a lot of extra videos. And I've currently got them scheduled. So I've got a video going out every 4 days from now until currently the end, the beginning of May. For those watching this later on, I've got about 6 or 7 weeks worth of videos already lined up, ready to go. That's something that's probably a better tip for being able to sort of grow your channel, is being consistent. Mm-hmm. That's probably the biggest one for me. Yeah. At least it's what I found works for me. So,
yeah, it makes sense. Any pitfalls or traps for aspiring creators to avoid?
Don't overdo it. Right. Like I've had a lot of people tell me, oh, mate, you should do like phone reviews and stuff like that. I'm a massive phone nerd. I change my phone way too often. All right. My telco loves me because I'll change phones whenever a new phone comes out. But creating mobile phone reviews or something like that is something I could do, right? But then I would go into the realm of needing to record, you know, actual face-based video and things like that, as opposed to just a screen recording, right? A screen recording is easy enough for me to do. Adding my own video feed into it then adds in exponentially greater difficulty levels as far as editing and things like that and transitions is concerned. Maybe that's something for the future, but what I have now is working and it's working well. And so I will stick to that. I'm also not trying to, you know, overload myself with creating too many videos, right? Like at the moment I'm kind of going, you know what? If I've got a regular cadence going, pushing yourself to go too hard is definitely one way to just burn yourself out and go, yeah, cool, it's not worth worrying about it anymore. And then lastly, monetization is a hard thing to get to. The requirements have greatly increased. I was very lucky that I've been able to reach that status. What I would probably say is that once you get to that status, it's definitely, yeah, as I mentioned earlier, it's not life-changing money, but it's the phrase I like to use is it's extra money is nice money to have, right? So it's something that comes along. Like at the moment, I'll be brutally honest, I've made about $10. Woohoo. but as the channel continues to grow and the back catalog of videos continues to expand, that passive source of income will grow as well. So I know a lot of people who get to monetization and then go, oh, but I'm not really making that much, you know, stick at it, keep growing. And then as you continue to grow, that source of revenue will continue to grow as well.
So that is the interview with Paul. I really enjoyed that. It was brilliant to hear how Paul uses YouTube, how it's helped him grow and reach his audience, and how he's engaged 30,000 followers. If you're keen to follow in Paul's footsteps and start growing on YouTube yourself, then why not check out Buffer's latest integration with YouTube? It's available now on all Buffer plans, including our free plan, and it's the easiest way to post at optimal times to reach more people on YouTube. You will have heard Paul in that interview talking about how he needed to post at the optimal time, especially because he was on that Aussie time zone, and Buffer can help you schedule content to go out right when it's needed. You can also save your content ideas for later, plan all of your posts in a calendar view and see when you're posting on other social networks as well. You can preview your content before you schedule it, and of course, schedule at a preferred time. It's the perfect companion for getting started on YouTube. Plus, Buffer helps you publish to this platform without having to become an expert on YouTube. So why not get started with Buffer for YouTube at buffer.com/YouTube. That's buffer.com/YouTube. Or simply head to buffer.com and click YouTube in the menu. All right, that is all for today. We hope you found this episode informative and helpful. Don't forget to follow us on our own YouTube channel. You can find us on YouTube by searching for Buffer. And as always, if you enjoyed today's episode, we'd really appreciate a review on Spotify, Apple, or wherever you get your podcasts. So good luck as you start creating and scheduling your YouTube content. And thank you so much for listening.